official spoiler warning. If you don't want to know about Iron Man 2, you should probably skip ahead to about 26 minutes and 54 seconds.
Hello and welcome to this slightly delayed third episode of Nerds on the Rocks. I am your host, Xantar, and with me this evening is Eric, also known as That Mario Lover, and
How's
Earl,
it going?
Also known as Break a Bone, Barak a Bone, El Gaucho Goof, Highlight of the Night, Cerebral Assassin, Penguin Bobby, and many other personalities.
Now you just make me sound schizophrenic.
Well, isn't that true?
It's just the way it goes.
And I should mention that Magus113 unfortunately could not be here tonight, and I promise all of our listeners I have had absolutely nothing to do with that. He is absolutely not bound and gagged in my closet. No,
that,
not at all.
I am sincerely disturbed.
I actually would think you would enjoy that a bit too much, but let's hope he does not hear this.
Right, moving along. Our three segments this week. First is On Tap, Iron Man 2, the movie. Second is The House Special. Is 3D a gimmick or here to stay? And finally, we shall have our cocktail chatter, the interesting news for you to share at your cocktail parties tonight. First up, Iron Man 2. We have all seen it now, yes?
Yes, indeed.
And could you please give me your quick impressions? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
A thumbs up.
Definitely up.
Yes, I
agree. Now, is this two thumbs or just a single thumb? Either way.
I suppose it's three thumbs.
Or six, I guess, between us.
I would probably go with a thumb if I would go on two thumbs up or not. I'd give it a thumb.
Yeah, I don't know that I would go two thumbs up. Honestly, it was a good movie. I thought it was a little bit predictable, truthfully. I mean, not like the script itself, but once you got into it, I thought the way that it progressed was kind of obvious, particularly with Hammer Tech, you know, seeming to have the means and... you know, you have this Russian scientist with the knowledge. I just assumed that they would get together, and I just thought it was kind of predictable, but maybe that was just me.
I find it hard to find comic book movies unpredictable because you kind of, it has the whole format where, you know, the hero is going to fight and the hero is going to win the day, and the villains have to, you know, they have to outsmart them, and they have to fight them and best them and get better at the end of the movie or whatever.
So maybe it's just inevitable. It's just kind of the genre of it.
So would you say that it was as good as the first movie?
No.
Better, personally. But
better than the first movie. Really, that's interesting. Why is that?
You know, honestly, I wasn't a huge fan of the first one. I mean, like, I enjoyed it, but I thought that... I thought the sequences of it were kind of... personally, I would have liked to seen more of the captivity in the Middle East. I thought that was rushed through, and it just seemed, you know, kind of a convenient plot line to get him, but I mean, I realize it is what it is.
Well, it is interesting that you bring that up, because the captivity was actually one of the favorite things I liked in the first movie, and I'll tell you why. When in the first movie, it was attached to our real world in a way, It was clearly in the Middle East, and the whole story was about the evolution of Tony Stark and his development of a conscience, as it were. And he has a mission in the first movie, which is to eliminate all of the weapons that he has developed and which have been killing people, as he comes to realize. In the second movie, that really is gone. We are told that he has privatized world peace, in his own words. However, that is more of a nebulous concept, and...
I totally agree. Go ahead.
Well, I remember a sequence in the middle of the movie. This would be the one where he... you would remember this. He brought out his shoulder guns and targeted each of the terrorists who were holding somebody hostage.
Absolutely.
Yes, that one. So, what I mean to say by that is in Iron Man, the first movie... there were consequences. There were real-world consequences. We were never told which country this was, and all of the terrorists looked strangely European. But it was about us. It was about something we could relate to in some sense. And I felt that Iron Man 2, unfortunately...
lost that.
It was about itself.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, honestly, I mean, I think the biggest thing I didn't like about Iron Man 2... was the portrayal of Tony Stark. I mean, you know, him, you know, taking a crap in his Iron Man suit was just completely unrealistic. That is not. That's just not Tony Stark.
Right.
Well, it is Tony Stark. He does have a drinking problem in the comics, and I understand why they put it in there. I just thought the whole build up to it was kind of stupid with the whole daddy issues, which I don't remember being that heavily portrayed in the original movie. And I thought it was kind of weak in this movie that they just kind of like, oh, we needed some type of emotional crutch for him, so let's give him daddy issues, and he starts drinking, and everybody hates him for it.
I thought the Russian villain was pretty shallow, too. I don't think they really did his storyline justice at all.
I don't think they did any storyline justice. I think that was my biggest issue, is that a lot of things happen in this movie without any
rhyme. It was like mostly action was the enjoyable bits of it, and I think that's more what I meant. But as in terms of like which is actually a better movie, I think Iron Man 1, you know, in terms of substance was better.
Well, in terms of, but like, okay, like I don't think the villain has much of a motivation. Like, again, somebody with daddy issues, which is kind of weird. And then Hammer just seemed like, I don't know why he became like that guy who wanted to take Tony Stark out. I mean, it's not like they were in the same field at that point. I thought the thing with War Machine was kind of out of nowhere. Like, your friend's drunk in a costume, so you decide to put on another one and wreck his house. Stuff like that throughout the movie. It's just like I watched it and I don't know. Maybe I missed something. But how did the villain know that Tony was going to be in?
Exactly. How did they know that he was going to be in the race? Is that where you're going with that?
Not even the race, because he decided that. How did he know he's going to be in the city?
Well, you know, I think because he knew that he would be going to his sponsored event because Stark was sponsoring the car. But maybe that even that was a stretch. But yeah, I agree. But in particular, how did he know that Tony was going to be out on, you know, the track? That's just absurd. He decided at last minute. I don't know. It's like they apparently needed their trailer scene or something like that.
Okay. And I would also say, I'm sorry. One moment. I just wanted to speak about that scene. I would also say that it was a rather boneheaded plot on the part of Whiplash, or I suppose Ivan Vanko, because he was never identified as Whiplash in the movie. He attacks Tony Stark and has no protection whatsoever. His chest is bare, and if there had been someone in the crowd with a gun, that would have been the end of him.
Well, and he didn't have a protective suit, so, I mean, you mentioned the scene... Or the scene at least was mentioned in the first movie where, you know, the shoulder weapons come up and individually take out terrorists. I mean, why maybe that wasn't part of his mobile suit, I guess. I don't get why he had such an issue dispensing with the bad guy.
I think it was the mobile suit because I don't think it had any type of threat or anything, which is why he ended up having to fight hand to hand for the most part. And I also kind of wrote it. And this is what happened at the end, is that Whiplash wasn't really competition for him in a fight, so they had to make it somewhat dramatic, because really, Iron Man could have just thrown up and shot him once, and it would have been a short fight.
Yes, indeed. The final fight is rather anticlimactic, isn't it?
I like the fight with the drones itself, but like the fight with the main baddie was just like, okay, it's over. Like, I never thought they were in trouble. It's like a minute, if that.
Yes, Well, so I have a question for you. How do you feel about the actors? Obviously, Robert Downey Jr., tremendous performance. I think we can all agree on that, yes?
I honestly haven't really been displeased with the performance he's had since Cleaning Up.
Yes, indeed. And Gwyneth Paltrow, I felt that Gwyneth Paltrow in this movie actually had something to do. And
Okay. You bring up Gwyneth Paltrow.
Okay.
Where the hell was the scene where she kissed his mask and threw it out?
Yeah, that was the scene I was going to bring up, because like, it's hyped in auto trailers. It's an auto commercial. It's still in auto commercials. And it doesn't,
I mean, they still kiss at the end of the movie, which I didn't expect, I have to say. But that scene was, like, kind of a big deal, at least to me. I don't know. Watching the trailer, I was excited for
that
scene. Yes,
that rather perplexed me, too, because it is not as if it was cut for timing reasons. It was perhaps 2 minutes long and added a fun note to the character. You complete
it really
me.
That did.
Was, that was a fun line. I believe there is also a scene in the trailer in which Tony is teaching Black Widow how to use a pulse cannon on the arm. or you one can see him holding her hand up so that she can aim and
right, yeah.
That was also nuts in the movie, although obviously not as essential. How did you feel about Scarlett Johansson?
Other than the fact that she's extremely hot.
Fluff. Yeah. I mean, her and Sam Jackson, for that matter. I realize what they're leading up to, you know, with, you know, the Avengers or whatever, potentially. But I just didn't see why he needed to I don't know. It just seems like Samuel Jackson's becoming a cliche implement in so many films right now. And I mean, he's nice to see, but it's just like the more I see him, the less I want to anymore.
Yes, and this was a movie that in some ways suffered from middle movie syndrome. It sort of like the Lord of the Rings Two Towers or Matrix Revolutions, in which the plot is really a setup for other movies to come. Now, we don't know whether the next movie is going to be Iron Man 3 or the Avengers movie. I imagine they will try to do both.
You know, I guess from what I've read, it sounds like they're kind of going to aim for Iron Man 3 before the Avengers movie.
Avengers movie's first. It's in 2012, so it's 2 years from now.
Okay.
Well, I certainly hope that they can have a better villain, because I was rather underwhelmed by Whiplash, notwithstanding the performance by Mickey Rourke, who is quite... He is a force of nature, really. He is... he has screen presence. But his character was really, as you say, no competition for Iron Man himself. And the other character played by Sam Rockwell is an idiot.
Yes, yes he is. I don't know how heavy we've gone with spoilers, but that ultimate weapon, the ex-wife, as he calls it, that turns out to be a dud. Like, how did he become a famous scientist when, like, nothing he makes works?
I suppose it did make for a good joke.
Comic relief. I mean, he's there for comic relief.
I get that, but you also have to take him serious as a businessman. I mean, he's
competition. No, I completely agree. And as a villain, they shouldn't have made him such a pushover. But, that is the role that he filled, was comic relief.
I think you can have a push. I mean, if Whiplash was a physical threat, you can have somebody who's like that goofy backer type role. I mean, that's the role that Lex Luthor usually played in the Superman movies, where he wasn't like the serious threat, but he was always the one cracking the jokes and pushing Superman further and further in like all five of the movies he's in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of Superman, another random tangent, and you brought this up. What is it, superhero movies and them getting drunk? Superman got drunk in Superman 3. Spider-Man got drunk in Spider-Man 3. Iron Man gets drunk in this movie.
Well, I think it's an attempt to humanize him.
I don't remember if Mr. Fantastic gets drunk when he does his dance number.
It was a character note in Tony Stark's, in the original comics, was it not?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I just find it weird that so many superhero movies put scenes like that in. Like either that or the goofy dance scene, like Mr. Fantastic, Spider-Man, Iron Man. I don't think any of the Batman movies, even the George Clooney one, went that far with campness.
Well, in Batman Begins, Bruce Wayne pretends to be a party boy, so I'm sure he has acted drunk at several points, although I'm sure he is actually emptying his champagne glass into the houseplants or something like that.
They actually do show that. I know they show in Begins. I forget if they showed it in The Dark Knight, but at one point when he's at the table discussing Batman with Mr. Earl and that other way, he throws the thing behind him and he starts acting drunk. That was a nice touch, but yes, again, that's somebody acting drunk.
Yes, Batman himself never gets drunk.
I don't even think he drinks.
No fun at all in parties, I imagine. Don Cheadle, how did you feel?
I thought Don Cheadle was interesting. I mean, didn't you? I don't mean him as a him in the movie. I more mean him as a choice to replace. I don't even know who the original actor was for that.
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard.
Okay, so I mean, what did you think of the choice to replace him?
Well, I kind of prefer Terrence Howard in the role. I don't know how to phrase it, but I take Don Cheadle as more of a serious actor, and Rhodey was kind of more like this comic relief sidekick type role. And I don't know. I don't think they had the same type of chemistry that Terrence Howard and Robert Downey Jr. had.
I completely agree with you, and I felt that Terrence Howard's performance felt as if he had a history with Tony Stark that went quite a ways back. And it was a history which was not always completely buddy-buddy. Don Cheadle's interpretation of Jim Rhodes. I should say that they are both serious actors. Terrence Howard was, for example, in Crash and Hustle and Flow. Don Cheadle, of course, was in Hotel Rwanda, among other things. But in Iron Man 2, Don Cheadle felt more as if he was a straight-up sidekick, despite his protestations to the contrary. And he did not have much of... He did not feel as if he was very irritated with Tony. Whereas Terrence Howard, I felt, often was quite annoyed with his friend, although he remains a faithful friend nonetheless.
Yeah, that's pretty much... Like, their relationship just didn't seem like it was really that close in the movie compared to the first one. Like the whole scene when he first meets the Iron Man and he's, like, talking to him on the phone while he's finding his suit, I didn't feel like that chemistry was in the movie anywhere, even when they were in the suits together or fighting.
No, it seemed like they'd completely grown apart since the first movie. It just didn't, it didn't jive at all.
Which would be kind of weird. I didn't even realize that the movie's, what, 6 months after the original? So it's a pretty short time frame after the events of the first movie. I mean, it seems like a whole different world, the way he's talking about globalizing world peace in 6 months and everything, but I guess you can do it out when you're a giant robot.
Well, and perhaps he's getting some help from the Hulk running around.
Actually, that was another nod. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but near the end of the movie, when he meets with Nick Fury for the second time, if you see in the background, like, there's some news feed on the television, which is about the incident that happened about halfway through the Hulk movie, about his attack on the university.
No, I did not catch that.
So I think they wanted you to assume that either the Hulk takes place near the end of Iron Man 2 or just around the same time.
Now, did either of you wait for the teaser at the end of the credits? I did not, but I
did not, I have to honestly say.
I did, because my friends wanted to wait. And, I mean, I've already seen it on YouTube beforehand, and I really don't think it was worth it. I guess one of those things where I think they put it in and it's cool for fans, but like a normal person would see it and would not get it. Like, I understand it's a Thor hand, but you just see a hammer, and I'm assuming that 90% of the movie audience won't associate the hammer with Thor, and well, that's the fact.
It is.
Well,
it is,
but
interesting,
did you recognize, Captain America's shield?
Yes.
Yes, I did, but I would argue that Captain America is a much more recognizable character than Thor. I don't think that very many people outside of comic book fans know who Thor is.
Or realize that Marvel has a Thor licensing.
Yes, indeed. I am someone who has read comic books from time to time. Even I don't really know what Thor is and who his villains are.
Well, I assume like everything else his villain would most likely be Loki, so I mean that's his main baddie, his brother, god of what, like trickery or something like that.
So that would be Loki?
Yeah.
I see. Now what was the other thing that I wanted to bring up? Oh, so I wanted to say that as I said, this was a movie that was in very many ways much about itself and has withdrawn from the real world. And I felt that that's really quite too bad. One of the most encouraging things about the good comic book movies that came out was they had issues that were something that we could relate to. X-Men, for all its faults, X-Men was an allegory about the alienation of people, and X-Men 3 in particular hit us over the head with allegories to the Holocaust, the internment of Japanese during World War II, etc., etc. Spider-Man 2 is about an ordinary man who is given great responsibility because he is given great power. Batman Begins, well, it is about a man who, really, he is the aspiration of any ordinary person because he is somebody who is unpowered himself. And I feel that Marvel Comics is trying to withdraw from that for some reason, and I think that is really too bad.
I don't know if this is the same type of thought, but it kind of reminded me of like a James Bond movie where it's like a guy fantasy. Like, I mean, at the start, the first half an hour, they're jumping from location to location. I mean, you go from New York to California to Morocco to Russia, and then you're all over the map, and there's no rhyme or reason. It's just like, oh, we're here now, so you know we're just gonna do a scene here for now. And it felt like it's just like fantasy porn, because it's like, oh, he's in the suit. Oh, this cool briefcase suit, which...
Was that it, or are you good?
It served no purpose.
I think that particular scene is probably the underlying root cause of my frustration for, you know, just scenes that were written in just for fluff, just to show off special effects or make Iron Man seem cool, not really advancing the plot at all.
Yes. Now, are either of you aware of a good Iron Man villain? Because so far I've been rather underwhelmed by both of the villains in the two movies. Iron Man 1 was the warmonger, Obadiah Stane. He was essentially Iron Man in a bigger suit. And Iron Man 2 was, well, Whiplash, who is also essentially...
Iron Man in a bigger suit.
Yes.
Which I thought was kind of stupid. I didn't know he wore an iron suit.
That is one of the brilliant things, I think, about the Spider-Man villains or the Batman villains. Batman, in particular, his villains do not try to take him on his own terms. In fact, that is the whole reason he has so much trouble with them. The people who do take him on their own terms are the mob, and they're squashed quite easily. So,
yeah,
who would be a good Iron Man villain?
Well, I mean, the main one, the big one, is the Mandarin, and he is part of the organization from the first movie, The Ten Rings. They were the organization that held Tony hostage during the first movie, and even though it's not hinted at all in the movie, the second movie, I read an interview since I've seen it, and apparently the guy who gives Ivan the ticket to go to get Tony the first time is part of the Ten Ring as well. But there's like no type of hint whatsoever in the movie that they are part of it.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know. I think the issue you have with Mandarin. I mean, if you get into Mandarin, I'm pretty sure if you get into Mandarin, you have to get into like finding an alien spaceship and stuff like that. And I'm not sure if that's something that Marvel really wants to do with their films. I mean, I think they're kind of trying to go more mainstream with them too. I mean, I could be wrong.
I don't think they care at this point.
Well, after all, the Thor movie is about gods.
Well, yeah. But Iron Man is cast in a much more modern, real day. I mean, it's supposed to be essentially now, something special. Whereas I think going to something like Thor, you're going for a fantasy atmosphere. People will buy it anyway.
Iron Man's kind of fantasy too. You've seen the type of room he has and stuff. I mean, his dad hid a new Iron Man.
Absolutely. And the tech in this one was definitely... yeah, you're right. It was far more exaggerated. I can see where you're going with that.
Yes, that section where he was building an atom. I took some chemistry courses. That's just complete nonsense.
Well, and the what was it supposed to be? A particle accelerator that he was building? I mean, like I was so frustrated that he's gonna create this atom. I don't know.
Whatever. It was not exactly the size of a Large Hadron Collider, was it?
Right, I'm like, what is he building? A mini Hadron Collider, exactly.
Not only does he build it, but he builds it in like an afternoon when he's bored. You know, he saw his daddy's video, he had his thing, and he's like, oh, I'll just create a new element tonight, I'm bored.
And it's like 5 minutes, or it's like seconds after his computer tells him, you know, there's a problem, it can't be synthesized,
yeah.
And then he synthesizes it, like, what the fuck?
And that reminds me of another point in his character, Shield agent who is like watching him, protecting him or whatever, and he can't leave the ground, and Tony leaves the ground, creates a new element without this dude noticing at all. And then he's like, oh, I gotta go. I'm like, what was the point of putting him in the movie?
I suppose for continuity, because didn't he appear in the Hulk movie?
He's in the original Iron Man. He's the agent that's always trying to get time with Tony and Pepper Potts. So it's that same dude. I don't know. I understand why they're trying to get continuity. I think they just put him in there so that they can tease the Thor thing at the end, because he's the one who goes to New Mexico and finds the hammer.
I see. Well, so that is our impressions of Iron Man 2. I will... final thoughts, either of you?
Decent flick, but ultimately just flashy, I think.
I enjoyed it.
I would say that I did enjoy it despite all its flaws, and it is probably the best summer movie to come out this year. It may very well be the best one to come out this year at all. I'm not finding anything very promising about the upcoming ones, except for there's a Pixar one.
Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3. Well,
of a big deal to me.
That is not really competing with Iron Man 2. It is the best action movie. I will say that. I
still have high hopes for the Expendables. I mean, I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but to have all of those big time old action stars in one movie, I just expect something special.
Yeah, I totally agree. It'll be cool to see Sylvester Stallone back on the screen again. It's been a while.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, we talked about it last week. And so in any case, would you recommend that people see it in theaters? Most of them probably have.
I would not recommend it in IMAX for $20 a ticket, though.
Say again, you would not recommend IMAX.
I would not recommend it in IMAX for $20 a ticket. I think IMAX tickets are expensive. And it doesn't really do anything special. It looks nice, but I assume it's just as nice in a normal theater.
All right.
Yeah, good movie.
All right, and that is our Iron Man 2 review.
Now for our second segment, we've got 3D entertainment. Is it here to stay or just a gimmick? Breakabone, why don't you start us out with that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bigger hook this time, partially because of the success of Avatar, but also just because it's being pushed in more than one market this time. Because the first few times it's been pushed, it was mostly a gimmicky movie attraction. But now you have like movies doing it. You have people coming out with 3D TVs. You have like PlayStation coming out with support for 3D games. Nintendo announced the 3DS. And just this morning, I believe Microsoft announced support for 3D games on the Xbox 360. So you have it being pushed in like different markets. So it has a better chance of being sustained this time around.
You know, well, and I mean, that's cool and everything with 3D video games and everything, but I mean, if you're looking at, you know, the PS3, I mean, the PS3 is ultimately now, developers are saying, is going to be a more powerful console than the 360. It will outlast it in terms of performance, and on the PS3, they're finding that a game that they might be able to make at 1080p, you know, running 60 frames a second now has to be bumped down to 720p running 30 frames a second to accommodate 3D, because it has to render a whole extra frame just for your, you know, for both eyes.
The people who notice the difference between 720p and 1080p are a very small minority of the population,
I think the bigger deal, though, is the frame rate drop.
It depends on how bad we're talking. If we're talking like Perfect Dark levels where it's kind of stuttery, but if we're talking difference between 60 and 30, I mean, how many people actually pay attention to how different it actually is?
As long as Kasabasina of IGN does.
Yeah,
he's a whiny bitch, but
I can argue
anyway.
The difference between a 60 and 30 frames per second game. I know when it dips really far, but other than that, as long as it's, you know, running constantly, I'm okay with it.
Yes, indeed. Now, on the subject of 3D, I should say, by the way, that listeners, Earl, that is Baraka Bone, has been upgrading his intelligence through the use of special mushrooms. That was the sound you heard in the background there. We apologize, but he has to do that from time to time. Now, on the subject of 3D, it seems to me that there are two insurmountable problems with 3D. Well, really, one. One is the problem is that 3D on a TV screen must be set up specifically. You must either wear particular glasses, or you must sit in a particular part of your room, which, depending on the setup of your room, may not be in a comfortable location. It is not background viewing. By any means, one could not hang up TV screens in a bar, playing 3D images, because people passing through will not be able to see those 3D images. And I would not be, for example, have a TV on in my kitchen as I am cooking, and be able to turn around and do whatever I want to do, and just glance over at the TV every once in a while to see what is going on.
No, I agree. And does it really look better or more realistic? I think it's distracting to some degree.
Well, that is exactly the second point I wanted to bring up, which is that every advance in projection technology and television has been to make the experience more realistic somehow. The advent of sound, for example, made the experience more realistic. Color obviously made it more realistic. HD provided for a more realistic image. 3D projection, I would have to say, does not make it more realistic.
No.
I guess, it's one thing when you go into a movie theater and you kind of, for the most part, you can usually see a screen in any direction, but I just don't see how any of it's going to be replicated or if anybody would actually want to suffer through it at home. Like, have any of you ever done the 3D TV shows that sometime air?
So, for example, that one episode of Chuck?
Yes, that's easy.
Oh, that was awful, but that's using the old, Anaglyph style of 3D with the blue and the red or whatever.
Is that not how it's done? I assume that's how it... Oh, you mean like the three overlaid pictures instead of like an actual...
Well, it's using... Yeah, it's not using overlaid images. It's using inversed colors of red and blue so that when you wear the red and blue glasses, one tinted blue over either eye, you get somewhat of a 3D effect. And that's the worst... implementation of 3D really that's out there right now.
It really seems to me that 3D is a technology that is custom made only for Avatar and other movies like Avatar. For example, I could not imagine a serious talkie film. I'm trying to think of an example now. The Hurt Locker is really an action movie. It could perhaps benefit. But, for example...
How about Moon?
Moon. Yes, very good. Moon. To some extent, it would still benefit from a 3D movie. But perhaps your one... A typical
you're
romantic
not
comedy.
Your point here.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I'm sorry. I'm blanking on...
I could see a romantic comedy kind of benefiting from 3D as well. If you have some really mushy scenes.
So are you guys just going to completely talk yourselves into loving 3D now or what? You guys make me sick.
No, I still think 3D. I personally hate watching 3D because it's just cumbersome to watch with anything on my face other than what I'm already wearing. But I also don't. I mean, like, movies can be better, but I don't think it adds to the experience. Like,
I think that the only movie in which it adds to the experience is Avatar. And Avatar worked because it was a movie which had very bright colors, and that helped because 3D, the image is by its very nature going to be dimmer. 50% light reaches each eye. And an action movie such as Avatar with great sweeping vistas so that you don't notice that each 3D layer is actually flat... Those are the only movies which would benefit from 3D projection. I do not see, for example, Casablanca benefiting very much from 3D.
Right.
I was going to say that Avatar also had 3D in mind from the start. It wasn't like, we're going to make a 2D movie and, shoot some scenes in 3D. We're not going to, it's going to be partial.
Well,
it was
or adding 3D after the fact.
I thought it was filmed in 3D.
Yeah, no, it was. No, absolutely, that's what I'm saying. But a lot of films are adding 3D after the fact.
Yeah. And even the ones that are filmed for 3D they aren't filmed for 3D. They're filmed with those stupid gimmicks like the new Resident Evil movie where you don't create an environment naturally. You just create like set pieces where like your character is throwing stuff at the screen or your character's jumping through a window. So, it looks like they're going towards the screen instead of actually like, filming a world in which you can get immersed in like Avatar did.
And one thinks of movies that are founded from the beginning as 3D movies. Think of the movies that typically win Oscar movies. For example, A Beautiful Mind. I do not see how, even if that was conceived as a 3D movie from the beginning, how they would have enhanced it in any way.
No, I don't think, because I don't think the visuals were the focus of it either.
Yes, indeed.
But I... Th- I think visuals are becoming more and more focused, and I think mostly action films are going to be what's going to benefit from 3D. But the biggest issue is that even if 3D works, and even if 3D doesn't give you a headache anymore, and even if it kind of looks realistic at this point, it's still really lacking a lot of depth. I mean, you know, you look around at the screen, and it's not like you have multiple points of depth. You have a few points of depth, but it's like, you know, a person's arm is not more or less further away. He is a certain amount, you know, further away or whatever. I think that until, you know, the techniques are refined, I think it's ultimately going to be kind of 3D, but not really realistically 3D, and that's going to detract from it.
It seems to me that the only 3D that would really take off is essentially the equivalent of the Star Trek holodeck. That would be something new.
Yeah, well, okay. You and I can keep dreaming, but
I see like minor improvements, like, you know, like I can see more theaters integrating like IMAX quality sound, and, you know, like better, more vibrant pictures with you know, like how like Sharp has those new TVs that adds the little spectrum to their color scheme for sharper and brighter images. I don't know what the next revolution is going to be. I hope it's not 3D. I mean, we're going to have to deal with it for the next 3 or 4 years until movies start bombing left and right. How did Clash of the Titans do?
It was like flop of the Titans.
Well, it did make quite a lot of money, but I do not believe that the 3D experience raked in that much more.
Well, Clash of the Titans 3D was added after the fact.
Yes,
but that's why I'm asking, because I don't know how, like, because I know they added it just because they're like, oh, it's 3D, people are going to go see it now. So I didn't know if it actually worked in their favor or not, if, you know, it just ended up making back its budget or whatever.
Also, to be honest, it was not a very good movie to begin with.
Right.
No, and I think that was the point. It's like, it's not a good movie, we'll throw 3D in and we'll make a few extra bucks because you charge $5 more for a ticket. Which is another thing we didn't mention, is that the added price to the consumer is something that might turn people off, because it's the same thing with IMAX. I see certain movies in IMAX when I feel that they would benefit from it. I won't see a movie in 3D just because it's in 3D.
Yes, indeed. Now, I would like to bring up an article written in Newsweek by Roger Ebert. It is called Why I Hate 3D Movies. Among other things, that the screen is dimmer, and about 20% of the population, he says, will always experience headaches upon watching a 3D movie. That seems to be an insurmountable obstacle to me. He also talks about an interesting technology. Now, I will quote from Roger Ebert now. For years, I've been praising a process invented by Dean Goodhill called MaxiVision 48, which uses existing film technology but shoots at 48 frames per second and provides smooth projection that is absolutely jiggle-free, etc., etc. It doubles image quality. The result is dramatically better than existing 2D. In terms of standard measurements used in the industry, it's 400% better. That is not a misprint. Those who haven't seen it have no idea how good it is. I've seen it, and also a system of some years ago, ShowScan. These systems are so good that the screen functions like a window into three dimensions. If moviegoers could see it, they would simply forget about 3D. Now, I find this to be a rather interesting idea. The idea that the resolution and the clarity of the image could be made so good that it seems to be a real image, as if it is out a window, and it perhaps that could be a replacement for 3D.
And maybe it could. I mean, and not just that. I mean, you can look at, who is it, Toshiba, that has George Takei doing their new commercials, that they've added a new color spectrum, yellow, you know, to their televisions. You guys familiar with that at all?
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning about the show.
I'm just saying that I'm thinking that even something like that is a huge step forward. And this, I'm sorry, was it MaxiVision 48?
Yes.
I guess it sounds like something that you have to see to believe, but I want to see it.
All right, then. So, in conclusion, we 3D, we are very much still critical of the technology. And nonetheless, is it still here to say, I would say that the financial rewards of 3D movies have convinced Hollywood that it should still stay with it, if nothing else, because it is impossible to pirate. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with the fact that it's impossible to pirate, so I mean, I don't know why you would. I don't know why you would want to watch 3D. The end.
Very good. Final segment. It is cocktail chatter. That piece of news and information that you can use to dazzle your listeners at your cocktail parties tonight. Eric, please take it away.
Yes, indeed. Well, I chose for my story we've got Steam on Mac now, which is kind of a big deal for me. I don't know about you. Do you play much for games on your Mac?
That is a bit of an oxymoron, don't you think?
You know, it's not anymore because, I mean, you know, with Steam on the Mac, they've actually got 48 titles that are available today on launch day.
And most importantly, they have Portal. Free,
absolutely for free.
Yes,
for your
indeed,
Macs.
But that
you
is,
could
that
right
is,
now.
That is limited, is it not? It is only until May 29th. Is that right?
24th, I think.
24th.
Even. But, yeah, it's a short offer, but get in on it because it's awesome.
So, you have access to a computer right now, so I don't see why you wouldn't play such an awesome game.
Right, absolutely. When it's free for both Mac and PC.
Our public service announcement for tonight is that Portal is free. If you have not played it yet, it is free for PC and Mac, and Steam is also available. You should go out and download it now. Next.
Literally right now.
Yes, indeed. But wait until we finish our cocktail chatter, which
indeed
will be... next up is Earl. Please take it away.
Mine is a pretty simple one. It's about an Englishman who was named Richard Smith, and he thought it was such a dull name that he had his name changed to Thor... Stormhammer Deathclaw Firebrand. So I'm just curious, what type of name have you ever thought about giving yourself?
Now, Earl, did you hear about the woman who ran into Jesus? Lord Jesus Christ.
No, I did not.
She hit a pedestrian, and it turned out that the pedestrian's name, he escaped with minor injuries, by the way, but his legal name was Lord Jesus Christ.
That is an awesome name. I cannot see that getting you many jobs, though.
Well, and I suppose she was never going to be able to live it down among her friends that she ran over Lord Jesus Christ.
Indeed. I mean, you know, it's not as bad as what was it, the woman I read about a few months ago? I think it was Marijuana Pepsi Jackson or something like that.
Marijuana Pepsi Jackson.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it, but... She's actually, well, I mean, the only reason the story came to the public spotlight was because she was had this horrible name and somehow succeeded as like a lawyer of some sort. So, but anyway, back to your story, Earl. I'm sorry. Names, awful names.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about having some awesomely cool name or some type of nickname?
Honestly, I had the nickname Squints growing up. So,
I once went to high school with a fellow named Michael Hunt. I felt very sorry for him.
Oh, dear. Yeah, you told me about that. A real live person named Michael Hunt.
You don't see the problem with that.
Yeah.
Very well. Moving on. And my cocktail chatter, I actually have a double cocktail chatter tonight. Both are related to our previous episode of Nerds on the Rocks. First is that a filming date has been announced for the fourth Twilight movie, Breaking Dawn. I gave a summary of the plot of Breaking Dawn in the previous podcast. You should check it out if you have not listened to it already. It is quite a story. It has been announced that filming will begin on the two films. It is being broken up into two films that will be shot back-to-back in Vancouver this fall, 2010. So, we now know that vampire C-sections are soon to come. And the second cocktail chatter that I have is that GameScoop, IGN's podcast on gaming, also discussed Activision and Bungie last week. And what is this message that... Oh, never mind. In any case, in discussing Activision and Bungie, the editors were speaking about, were speculating about the possible games that Bungie would come up with, and examining the previous history of the company. Now, I bring this up because one of them mentions the Myth series, and the other editors did not know what Myth was, and he had to explain to them that it was a real-time strategy game, and they did recognize Oni. I do not believe that they brought up the Marathon series at all. So, all of this is to say that last week, officially, Nerds on the Rocks was more knowledgeable about Bungie games than IGN, which, if you think about it, is a bit of a sad state of affairs.
Unfortunately, I don't think that that's too far of a stretch for many people anymore, though.
And, I mean, here's the sad thing is, while you were talking about it, I just went to their website to see what they had on Bungie, and they give you a breakdown of every game Bungie has made on Macs, on PCs, on Xbox, on 360.
Now, Bungie's a very proud company of what they've done. I mean, they started off as a fairly small company.
Well,
yeah, absolutely, and they made very successful titles. I mean, originally made Halo for the Mac and were bought out by Microsoft so that the title could be on the Xbox. I mean, they grew from a really small company on a platform with no games to being one of the forefront names in gaming.
But the point is that, yes, it is true that many people these days would not recognize early Bungie games, but certainly professional gaming journalists should, one should think.
You would, like I said,
do a little research.
They can do the research on their website. It took me 10 seconds to find the Bungie games on their site.
Well, and even if you don't know something about somebody, it just seems like common courtesy that if you're going to talk about him, you might just take a quick peek at something about him.
Yes. So, Nerds on the Rocks, officially more knowledgeable than IGN. We put the IGN in ignorant. Yes, I made that up just now. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Please join us next week. Magus113, it seems, will not be able to join us once again, and we do not know who will be the host. But thank you, all of you, for listening to this third episode of Nerds on the Rocks. It seems to be a recurring thing now that is actually happening almost on schedule. And for Nerds on the Rocks, I am your host, Xantar. And I am joined here by Earl and Eric. Please say goodbye.
Howdy ho. Goodbye.
Oh, sweet. Oh, you get one name going out. Awesome. And
yes.
Have a good night.